SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online, and I guess something, I guess there was what, a format style change? I don't know. Something went on, I guess, yesterday or Wednesday on the app, on the Sirius XM app. I'm always the last to know on that kind of stuff. Thanks to those who listen that way and let me know. And of course at our website too, stevebick.com. I got to adjust this headset because I think I broke it yesterday, to or from the racetrack. Good morning. I'm back home. And, today there's just too much generic, and assorted, things to do when it comes to the rest of the racing action. We don't live by Saratoga alone. And has been pointed out any number of times, you can win just as much money at Arlington this weekend, or at Indiana, or everywhere else. So that's what we're going to be looking at, because there's a little bit of everything. And you know, the one aspect of the early opening that really hadn't come up, the effect that it's going to have on the other venues that, you know, traditionally have this weekend, this second weekend of July, you know, historically to themselves. And that includes the Arlington Million Preview Day. We'll talk to Marcus Hirsch in about 35 minutes. The Delcap, the Delaware Handicap, you know, right now down a notch to grade two, but the kind of field, actually, we'll talk to Rich Glazer in about 15, 20 minutes. One of our favorite visits of any summer is with the great Rich Glazer, the long time host and just affable face and voice of Delaware Park. But, you know, the Dell Cap and Indiana. Now, of course, the Indiana card goes into the late afternoon, starts late and goes into the evening. So they're not as affected necessarily, but it is notable. I mean, Saratoga is going to, you know, you got what, an 11 race card tomorrow? And you know, that is going to draw handle away from, you know, the other Saturday afternoon facilities. They're just a fact. So that topic hasn't really been broached, to be honest. Occurred to me this morning as I was doing some prep. But anyway, we're gonna certainly go through. And James Scully in hour two. Scully, not just interested in betting Indiana, he's interested in being there for the brilliant racing team and the horse that is going to be a big price, asking for it, but, you know, is not certainly out of range. So we'll talk to James about having a piece of a runner in the Indiana Derby, as well as, you know, what he thinks of the rest of the field and the rest of that card. The Philly race, we've said, the Philly race is really good and not easily figured out. And frankly, with Mr. Money drawing outside, you know, the two horses that drew outside, Math Wizard and Mr. Money, kind of opens the door for somebody you know, potentially for somebody else. And the two 8-to-1 players, Gray Magician for Peter Miller and Always Mining for Kelly Rubley, they're, you know, they're the two obvious candidates if it's not going to be one of the two favorites. And Mr. Money at 6-to-5, that's a vulnerable number. We respect Brett Calhoun and we like Mr. Money and all, but from the 11 hole, 6-to-5, math wizard close to him, you know, from a figure standpoint, I don't know. It's going to be fun. It's a nice card. So Scully will look at Indiana, Marcus for Chicago, Rich for Delaware. Later, Jay Pribman back from a vacation. Very excited to hear about his trip. Kind of a unique vacation choice. I won't reveal. And Nick Tamaro, I didn't think Nick was going to be able to join us, but early this morning, Nick got back to me, and he is freed up late in the show. So we'll talk to Nick maybe about 11:30, 11:40. All right, but Jay Pribman back too, and we'll get Jay's follow-up on Jerry Hollendorfer. Jay with the story earlier this week, basically accurately detailing Del Mar not allowing Jerry to train or enter. And then yesterday, Steve Anderson with the details of Dan Ward being able to run. And so Jerry shifting a lot of Del Mar intended runners to longtime assistant Dan Ward. If you missed our conversation with Dan back in the early spring, you know, long time with Jerry and before that with Bobby Frankel. And so Dan will have the opportunity to run horses. And you know, it's very similar to what has gone on here in New York with Don Chetlos being able to, you know, go on with the Larry Best horses. It doesn't resolve, obviously, the long-term situation for Hollendorfer, Drew Cuoto. I've been in contact with Drew. Probably next week we'll have more. And from a legal standpoint, certainly Jerry Hollendorfer. He certainly didn't want to, you know, get, you know, pugilistic in terms of legalities, but he's going to have to, because this is just, it's just, as Dave Grenig said yesterday, it's just an insult and it's an outrage and just arbitrary, capricious, and any other, you know, wanton description of, you know, inappropriate administration. It just, you know, we'll let Jay bring you up on, you know, from everything that Jay's gleaned in conversation since he got back. So, is that everybody? Nick, Jay, Marcus, Rich. Oh, Ed DeRosa. We'll get Ed in here. And waiting to hear if Rich Migliori, we tried to get to Rich yesterday, and he had production meetings, you know, with the show, with the Naira show, and the big Saratoga Live and everything. So anyway, don't know yet. If I can get Rich Migliori in, that'd be great. If not, we'll get Rich next week. And one of the fun things, Rich handling the book of Chris Landeros, and we glommed on to Chris for tomorrow for the second race with Minute Mouse. And you know, it turned out we did the right thing. And just as I say this, Mig says, can you get me in right now? And the answer is yes. So Deja, let me send you Rich's number so that you can pull him in, and we'll start, and we won't take any breaks, and we'll get Rich Migliori to start the weekend preview. That'd be great. All right? Yeah, let's do that. All right, here we go. Give me 2 seconds, and I will vamp with you. And there's Mig. Give him a call. Yeah, Chris is going to ride Minute Mouse tomorrow, and that leads me into the off-the-turf news for today. And we'll also review yesterday's action. Fun opening day. And lots to cover. And of course, the rain that came was not as much and was not as difficult as had been feared, because, you know, first it looked like it was going to hit early. That missed us. Then the storm that they said would come at the sixth race absolutely could not have been more accurate. Literally, the sixth race was finishing, and the rain, it was just a quick passing shower, but it was enough to soak the turf. Ended up taking the 10th race off, and that's always frustrating. Ends up with an all situation in the multi races. There was actually still a decent pay in the, particularly in the pick five, but the track only was really wet for one race on the main, and that was the stake and comical, and really the stake was exciting. If you haven't seen the replay of the Sanford, the Schuylerville, Sanford's tomorrow, the performance of the Doug O'Neill filly, comical, really good. And Shippy, the other O'Neill, the recent purchase, ran well and wasn't, you know, it was kind of vying and at one point looked like a winner and then settled for third because Johnny and Kiss the Girl was making steady progress and looked like a winner, but comical, really good. So, okay. So Richie needs a couple of minutes. All right. After. All right. So we'll get to him. So let's do the rest of the review from yesterday. And I can tell you that two races remain on the turf today. You've got the stake, of course, the Forbidden Apple. I don't think there was ever a question that the stake would stay on the grade three, field of 10, and a really fun betting race. And frankly, if you go through that field and you're wondering about yielding turf, and right now, Glenn Kozak told me earlier this morning, right now they're calling it yielding, but he thinks with sun, there's not much wind, I can tell you that, right now anyway. But the hope is that the turf upgrades as the day goes on. Same thing with the main track. Main track right now is muddy for training, but Glenn thinks it'll be good or even fast by 1 o'clock. The other race that stayed on, one race on both turf courses on the inner, the Forbidden Apple, the ninth and the third, that very tricky small field, but a tricky allowance group going a mile and a 16th on the Mellon turf course, that stays on. Everything else came off. The second race, that State Bred Maiden group, where now Linda Rice is going to be 4-5 with Daddy Knows, the 13. The second race comes off the 6th, 7th, and the 10th. And the 6th is that Claimer on the was going to be on the inner. That'll be now 9 furlongs on the main. And then the other two races were both 5.5 furlong state bred affairs. The 7th is an allowance. There's lots of main track onlys, so that field will stay, you know, somewhat sizable. There have been 12 for the grass plus 4 MTOs. So I imagine you'll end up with probably 7 or 8 in the 7th to start the late pick 4. And then the nightcap, 3 MTOs. And there was a full field there, including us originally, but we were going to scratch anyway. Minute Mouse with the 12 hole, and the race kind of came back for Saturday, and we took a chance in there, and we went to seasoned jock agent Rich Migliori, whose jock agent career was at least 6 days old at that point, maybe 4 days old. And we landed Chris Landeros for Saturday. Mig, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Yeah, seasoned jockey agent. I didn't think there was a lot I could learn about this game. I'm learning again.
Well, the best part's going to come when you fire yourself.
Well, you know that'll happen.
You're going to look in the mirror and say, "I'm sick of you. You all your nonsense."
I was very hard on agents. There's no doubt about that. But I was hard on myself as well. So I can take comfort in knowing that I wasn't I was unreasonable. No, I shouldn't say I was unreasonable, but I was unreasonable with myself too.
I love it. And the one person I haven't heard from yet is Malika, to see when he saw that news. Have you heard from Drew?
I have not, but I think that's going to be a funny conversation when I do see him.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. Well, one thing though I could say, my jock, and it's even funny to say that, my jock, Chris Landeros, he's a lot nicer than I was when I was riding. He's like got a great personality. He's pleasant. He's excited to be here. And, you know, I think I'm lucky that he's my first foray into this.
That's a nice way to frame it. And how did this even come about?
Well, you know, I rode with Chris in California right after he lost the bug. And I was very impressed. I was always impressed with his riding. I said, man, this kid can really ride. And he wasn't riding a lot of live horses. And then my son Joey and he became friendly. And they were kind of running around together at Del Mar. They're just a few years apart. And so I got to know him a little bit more because of his friendship with my son. And I've kind of kept an eye on him over the years, you know, watching him develop. And he's really developed, and he's got a great finish. He really can finish on a horse. And the qualities that I like in a rider. And when he got a Derby mount this year, I wanted to call and wish him luck and congratulate him on, you know, having a Kentucky Derby mount. And I kind of just threw out the idea. I said, you know, at some point you're going to have to, you know, try Saratoga or, you know, try New York. And he had a great Gulfstream this past winter, so he's competing with the guys he'd compete with here. And I said, if you ever want to do that, I would be interested in working with you and helping you if I can. And he called me a few weeks ago and said, you know, I want to do this, and if I do this, I want you because you know everybody there. And so we decided to give it a try.
How about that? And, you know, certainly for Chris, and from a family standpoint, with Ian and Tracy Wilkes here, and of course married to their daughter, and with the kids, and it's a great scenario for them all to be together. And you know, you say how impressed you've been with Chris all through the winter. I would look up and I'd watch a race from, you know, from South Florida, and there he was, and I agree. I mean, there was lots to like, and so when, you know, Benji Hernandez was going to ride for us today, and when Benji couldn't get out of his call for Saturday for Minute Mouse, and I'm sure glad we did this, Rich, because the race came off the turf anyway, so Mouse would have scratched off the turf, and it occurred to me, Gary said, what do you want to do? And I said, let's reach for Landeros.
Well, listen, you know, we appreciate it. I've gotten a lot of good response, Steve. Obviously, we kind of jumped into this a little bit late. Like, you know, ideally, we would have made this decision a few weeks earlier, and I would have had an opportunity to kind of build for the first week, and the first book, I should say. But, you know, we wound up on five tomorrow, obviously three for his father-in-law and some very live horses, and it's you know, I'm hopeful that we get off the mark there, and four on Sunday. And this morning I got a bunch of calls, and like John Kimmel and I obviously are friends, and John rode Chris some in Florida, and he likes him. So we're working a couple of two-year-olds for John, an American Pharoah Filly, and a few others that he kind of picked out for us. So it's going to be, I think, a little bit slow at the beginning again because we jumped into this a little later than what's ideal. But I already see a lot of movement, people giving me a good response and responding well to Chris. So, you know, the last thing I want to do, less for me and more for him, is be a hindrance to him. I want him to be able to show people who he is that maybe are not familiar with him. And I know what a good rider looks like, and he's a good rider. I wouldn't have done this if I didn't, you know, feel very strongly about that.
Well, of course, coming off last weekend, too, down at Delaware Park, wins the Robert Dick, for Ian with Gentle Ruler. And frankly, she looks serious and probably shifts her attention up to Saratoga with plenty of opportunities looming on our slate. And, of course, you know, the next day, went back to Kentucky, wins a pair at Ellis for Ian and for Eric Foster. And as you mentioned, when you talk about the calls, Mark Hennig and Ian and Rusty, you know, Rusty Arnold on Derby yep. Champagne, and Contessa, Bruce Brown, and Stanley Huff. It's a very nice and Siaka, who I know you're gonna and me, you're gonna absolutely get some calls. So, best wishes.
No, it's good.
Well, and you got to compete. With
you know, real quick though. If people are unfamiliar with the way he rides, watch the race at Delaware, the $200,000 stakes. Stayed on the fence, saved every inch of ground, patient, got through. He rides that race consistently, and that's the way you win turf races. So it's really good. Actually, I took my brother off of two horses, and we're living together. He wasn't too happy at dinner last night.
Well, you're going to have to deal with that. I can't help you there. I can help you with a couple of horses, but the battling Migliori's may be reprised. Let's get a couple of early ideas, Rich, from day one, and you know, this early start, the 5-day week, some early impressions and expectations for the meet.
Well, you know, I'm excited about it, and I think the 5 days is going to be a good thing. You know, for years, racing 6 days up here, you'd have so much to catch up on the 1 day off, and rest being one of them, and laundry, and, you know, running errands, and going grocery shopping, whatever you needed to do. People didn't really have an opportunity to enjoy the area, and this is such a beautiful part of the world. You know, there's parts of New York State that people don't realize exist. And within an hour or two of here, there's so many beautiful things to do and opportunities to really enjoy upstate New York and the Adirondacks. So I think that's going to give people an opportunity to explore and open their eyes and minds to, wow, like look at this. You know, look at what we have at our disposal. So I think that's great. The racing's great. I mean, everybody puts their best foot forward here. I thought opening day, you know, it's so interesting. Joel Rosario is just riding in another dimension. I mean, you look at his ride on listing yesterday, just the way he does things. His hands are amazing, his strength in the finish. But then the last race is a 3-horse field, right? And he gets caught behind a glacial pace, and he's running off behind horses. And I don't blame him. This happens in racing. I don't think that anybody can say, oh, you know, he rode terrible. His horse bobbled. But it's a phenomenon. You get a small field, and horses get in more trouble in a small field than a big field because
Absolutely.
Riders, they're more aware of where everybody is, and they don't have as much to contend with. In a big field, a guy can get lost and sift his way through. So when Lascano was lapped on him outside, you know he's never letting him out of that pickle. And I just think it's amazing when you see short fields how much trouble can actually be found.
No doubt. I mean, we've heard that so many times. And, yeah, Rosario yesterday, not just him either. How about the ride that Junior Alvarado turned in on the Charlie Baker on Light the Posse, which ended up lighting up the board, was really a good spot yesterday for us, too. From a play standpoint, and I mean, he was relentless, top of the stretch. I didn't think there's any way that he would get there. And, that's kind of, a textbook Alvarado performance.
And you want to talk about strong. I mean, he's got such a strong yeah. finish. You know, and, you know, people that have a hard time relating to jockeys as athletes, you see this guy with a T-shirt on or with no shirt on, and he's got guns. I mean, he works out, and he really hones his craft. And I think he's been riding fantastic. On a whole, listen, you've got a very, very deep, strong riding colony here. But there have been a couple guys that have just been riding at another level, and Junior being one of them. I've been so impressed with him, obviously, Joel, the Irad and Jose Ortiz, Javier Castaneda, Johnny Velasquez. Has done everything there is to do as a rider, all-time winningest rider, money won, and he still rides with an enthusiasm that frankly, it's hard to keep up when you have very few mountains to climb still, right? And so to see him plying his trade, watching Dylan develop, my brother's rider, Dylan Davis, Dylan has really, really put himself in the upper echelon of riders, and they've done it through hard work. And so as a former rider, you know, and now doing this as a jockey's agent and with a guy that I feel fits in very well with this colony, it's fun for me to watch. Like I have such an appreciation for what I'm seeing, and you know, having ridden with an incredible Hall of Fame colony through the '80s into the '90s, I'm really getting a kick out of watching these guys ride right now. There's just a lot of talent here.
Well, no doubt, and we're off to a nice start. That included the 2 year olds. Comical. That was a terrific running of the Schuylerville. I thought it was notable, you know, with all these routes that are being run, certainly notable, Rich, that if you get out on the lead, you're in, you seem to be in very good stead. Armament yesterday and Gary Gullo. How about Gullo with a pair of wins? The 2 year old that held off the Bruce Levine late charger. And, you know, there was a lot to digest yesterday, and there were certainly some chances to score. Big Q for Dutchess View, the state bred group of fillies, a big brown bred by Golden Goose, actually, and Big Q with Rosario. But Saez was charging with that impassable Donna, who took a ton of money late. And, you know, she pulled up. It looked like she was a little bit of heat distress after the race. I got to check with Bruce Levine about.
I was by the barn this morning, and they said she's okay. So, you know, that's good news. And, you know, Bruce doesn't get the credit he deserves. Bruce used to win with first-time starters all the time, and he was so good at preparing and knowing where to run. And I won a lot of races for him with firsters. So when that horse was taking the money, I went, oh, she's good. And you know, some people maybe don't remember that and don't have as much confidence in Bruce for that, but Bruce does an amazing job. Gary Gullo getting off the mark like that, and you know, it brought that to mind for me because Gary and Dominic Lucio were so close.
Yeah.
1 year, Dominic and I won the first two races of the meet, the early double, and I was thinking about that yesterday. Like Dominic probably would be getting a kick out of Gary winning two on opening day, and I was happy for him. I thought the card itself, I mean, the weather didn't fully cooperate, but a terrific day of racing, comical. She's about as pretty a filly as you're ever going to see. I was watching her in the post-bred. I went, wow, this filly, she's got an elegance to her and a bounce in her step, even at the walk. She's got a great walk. And, you know, when people go to, like, horse sales and they say, well, I love the walk, that's what they're talking about. There's a certain swing to the gait and athleticism, even at the walk, that you'll see if you go to the Fasig Tipton, you know, two-year-old sales up, I mean, the yearling sales up here, that you can pick it out. There's a certain stride, there's a certain swing to a gait, and she had that just at a walk. I was like, I like this filly, and I was very happy to get 3-1 on her.
Good job. And then of course, not only did Doug O'Neill get a win, but how about Ben Cecil? And I didn't get a chance overnight to look up if and when the last time Ben Cecil brought a horse to Saratoga, but the West Coast Invaders, they're not a bad opener. O'Neill apparently not going to, you know, have any regular runners here, but certainly, you know, when he's had these 2 year old windows, he hasn't been afraid to ship in. So nice. Rich, weekend, anything catch your eye going into, you know, we got the Diana tomorrow with Chad and Peter Brandt, you know, heavily vested. But frankly, it's a competitive, all six are competitive. And for people who don't seem to understand this, stakes with purses over 50,000 horses run as individual entities. The people who think that some rules are being skirted when it comes to entries, there's no entries in stake races like this. That's why there's six individual betting interests.
Yeah, I actually heard some of that, and people thinking that like something untoward's going on, and it's just not the case. The rules are the way they are, and the way they've been, they have not changed. So, you know, obviously, listen, Chad done an amazing job in a very short time, and that's why he's built up the stable he has, and he's done it through hard work and being very good at what he does. And, you know, people, like, I think, I don't know if it's jealousy or they want to begrudge somebody their success. It didn't happen by accident. It happened because he worked at it. And I always admire and appreciate that. I'm just looking at the whole meet. You know, it's just always great to be here. The quality is here. Everybody's pumped up. They want to win here. It's great. And, you know, and I'm also doing the Fox shows for Naira, MSG, and Fox. So it's keeping me busy. We had a great show yesterday. I was on with Lafitte Pinkai and Paul LaDuca in the first ship. And we have so many hours, it's basically a couple of teams of people in front of the camera and behind the camera. And I got to say, our behind-the-camera talent, the people that make this go, the production side of it and the editing and the videos and audio, the engineers, this might be the greatest, most talented group of people that are going to not get the credit they deserve. They're unsung, incredible crew of people, great team that they put together at Naira.
Well, we'll get a chance maybe here and there to watch a little bit, some occasional afternoon maybe when you know we're not at the track, but mostly I should tape it. I should put the DVR thing on, and that way I'll have it and I can go back and review, because you know, a lot of times Andy will say, you know, this happened or that, and I you know, I'm at the track, so you don't see it. So I'll DVR it. You just prompted me.
Well, I you know what? I'd appreciate it, because I would actually, you know, bounce some questions off of you. You know, like anything, you've got to continually improve. Otherwise, you're going the other direction, and you've got a great opinion. You know, obviously, look what you've done with your radio show. I would value your opinion. Like, yeah, you might want to phrase something this way instead of that way, or maybe you deliver it in a different way. I would appreciate some, you know, criticism.
Well, I maybe will. All right, I'll add that to my responsibilities. To reviewing the show. Unbelievable, Rich. I appreciate it, and I'll see you later this afternoon. And let's get lucky tomorrow.
I look forward to it, Steve. I'll see you later.
Rich Migliori, everybody, and you can follow Rich on Twitter, Richard Migliori. And we're going to follow one Rich. We got the Rich Exacta, Rich Glazer, standing by from Delaware Park, one of our favorite visits of the summer. It's Del Cap weekend, coming off the heels of the Delaware Oaks and the Dick and everything else, the Henlopen, and terrific card last Saturday. And Rich Glazer, welcome back.
Well, thanks, Steve. It's always an honor to be on your show, and I don't mind taking a back seat to the famous Rich, Richie Migliori.
Well, you've got another nice card put together, and I know it's been a little bit of a struggle down there for the summer. There's been a couple of days where, you know, you've had to, you know, really hustle entries and so forth. But, you know, this card and this day, it's always a highlight of the summer at Del Park, and looking forward to it. And you certainly got the feature, you know, nothing to be ashamed of with that feature.
You know, you're absolutely right, Steve. Some years we have no big names, and we get 10, 12 fillies and mares. So one year we had Songbird, and we only had four of them. So you get the big name, you don't get the big field. You get the no big name, you get the big field. This year we have Elate, and we still have the nine-horse field. So we got the best of both worlds this year.
Well, let's dive in, and if you want to actually set the stage, you know, it's also, in addition to the Del Cap, you do have the addition of the Match Series. It's the third stop of the Match Series this year, third of five big days, and, you know, that's a wrinkle that Alan Foreman, after last year's return to the Match Series, and that really augments the action. Some overview of what's going on there tomorrow before we talk races?
Yeah, well, of course, the Delaware Handicap's the headliner, but like you said, we do have the Match Series and four match races, so that should help. Now, I'm a little disappointed in the size of the two of the fields, the ones on the main track, you know, that's the way it is these days. It's just there's so many opportunities, but I thought the Match Series would, you know, everybody would cooperate and they'd support more the tracks, but it didn't happen tomorrow, but it doesn't mean you can't find a good winner in those races.
Well, let's start our conversation then with the feature. And grade two, I know it was disappointing for management to lose the grade one. However, when you've got the kind of field that was assembled here with Elate and Blue Prize and Escape Clause, frankly, the scoring, you would think, there's a real chance you get the grade one back right away.
Yeah, Steve, you make me laugh because you're so right. But, you know, we were grade one. And then Songbird, the best filly in the country, comes in and wins. And that's the year they downgraded us after Songbird. So you tell me what's going on. But you're right. We have a grade one field in here, and they could go on and win a lot of grade ones this year, and that should help reboost it. And Elate, of course, won the race last year. She's coming off that nice win in the Fleur-de-Lis at Churchill. So, you know, Bill Mott kind of points for this race. If he wins, if Elate can win, Bill Mott will win four Delaware handicaps in his career, and that will tie Todd Pletcher, who has four, and the late Hall of Famer Henry Clark, who has four. So I'm sure Billy's firing his guns with Elate on Saturday.
Well, and she righted the ship a little bit after some harrowing beats, got back in the win column, and the previous win before the Fleur-de-Lis came in last year's Del Cap.
Right.
So, you know, here she is trying to defend, but you do have Nacho Correas with Blue Prize. She'll be in close attendance, and I've come to really appreciate the 5-year-old mare of Don Schnell's Escape Clause. She's a wonderful story. She climbed the ladder from, northwestern Canada obscurity, right to graded stakes, and this is a serious mare. This is not some cute story, and she absolutely ran Midnight Bisou to the narrowest of losses when it came to that Apple Blossom. I was there that day.
Yeah, you named the three major contenders and the three that I like too. You've got Elate, who beat the Blue Prize last time in the Fleur-de-Lis, but you don't hear people talk about weights too much. There's not a lot of importance. But this is a rare handicap race, and Blue Prize gets 2 pounds the shift off of that race. And they say at a mile and a quarter, 1 pound equals a length. So the 2 pounds off, she lost by a length and a quarter. That puts them right together. And then you got your obscure horse, Escape Clause. I hate to call her that because she is certainly not running obscure, but she's not the million-dollar breeding that you read about, and she's from Manitoba, and all she does is win. It should be a really good race.
We should mention, this is a mile and a quarter, and, that's also a bit of an anomaly on the schedule, to have fillies and mares going 10 panels. There is the presence. I do want to point out another broad, because if she was to run back to that top flight for Todd Pletcher and Sal Kumin and partners, another broad is not far off. And, one thing that sort of caught my eye, I was shocked, Rich. How about the 0-for-20 going on for Jorge Vargas? It's got to be an anomaly for him to be 0-for-20.
It sure is, because he's a very, very talented jockey. And the fact that Todd's using him tells you he's got faith in him. And you're right, another broad could sneak in there. And as I told you, Todd Pletcher's won 4 Delaware handicaps, and I'm sure he's looking for that fifth win, too, and getting the rail, save a little ground in that run to the first turn. So it's going to be a good race. And you got the Gotham Gala, the two-horse. Arnaud Delacour, the trainer, he's won about every stakes we've had at Delaware Park. He won 2 last weekend on Oaks weekend. He's won the Lighthearted. He won a few of the other minor overnight stakes. He's just been red hot, so and could be the one that tries to go wire to wire. So it's a good race.
I agree, and 10-1, your number on another broad. If you're looking for something other than the obvious, a late 7-5, Blue Prize 7-2, 5-1 on Escape Clause, and I tell you, the morning line looks pretty accurate. Actually, glancing at that, let's work our way backwards. Then get a couple of opinions, Rich. Rich Glazer with us from Delaware Park and the Glasgow, 7.5 furlongs. On the grass, these are the 3-year-old males, and you got some interesting participants in here.
In most of the other races, I'm having a hard time beating the favorite. and the glass goes the race, I'm going to take a couple shots with, because I couldn't find anything solid. There's little question marks on some, so I'm going to give you a real long shot in here. The three, Balivore. Balivore is by my favorite sire, Heartspun. I'm a little prejudiced, Heartspun. I was in the paddock when he walked in for the very first time to make his debut, sure. And I said, look at this horse. And he's just gone on to be such a terrific sire in the States, in England, in Australia, in Hong Kong. I've been betting him all over the world, Steve.
Unbelievable. And you know what? I'm just looking with the move to the turf, Carlos Mancilla, and why not? From a fake standpoint anyway, Rich, certainly a fit. If he can translate to turf, and Heartspun will get it. And let's see, who's he out of? He's out of a Distant View mare model figure. I'll see what I can find.
Okay. Anyway, but, you know, like I'm looking at the two, Fact of War, who's by the Factor. He's thrown out some good turfers. But this is a three-year-old in there, so there's a little question mark there. But hey, my other shot in that race is the five, and I'm not sure if you call it Parrot or Paray, but... You know the Euro bounce, Steve, where they say a horse comes from Europe and after he runs one race, the second time he's no good. Well, this horse is from Australia, and he ran one race in the Dixie at Pimlico and didn't run that great. But maybe because Australian is down under, it's the opposite. When they run their second race, maybe they run a good race. So I just think that horse could upset too. Got some good breeding, Harbor Watch. That goes traces back to the Northern Dancer line. So there's some good breeding there, too.
There's any number of interesting horses in here, and some of our favorite people, including Ned Allard with Abiding Star, you know, who's approaching half a million in earnings, 11-time winner. How about the late Mr. Bender's Just Howard Skedaddle and Graham Motion? You know, I've also Trey Abbott has been sending horses in selectively. Rich, 3 for 5 at the meet so far, and of course Forrest Boyce. And how about Celebration in here, who has had races that fit?
Yep, Celebration also bred nicely for the turf, and Forrest Boyce rides the turf very well. And you know everything you say is right. You've been following Delaware a little bit, Steve. I'm proud of you.
and I'm going to say something that you always give me the thumbs up, because the Hokesson. Is the sixth?
You said it right again. You're the only one. You're the only one. I think our track announcer doesn't really say it right. So there you go.
I love it. What do you like here?
Well, you mentioned your buddy Ned Allard, and I think Ned's going to win it. He won this race last year, and I think Always Sunshine, the number four, is sitting in a good spot coming off that last race, first start of the year, and he blew the field away. So I'm looking for Ned Allard to win it again with Always Sunshine.
Well, no dozing, of course, for the Delacours. Yeah. And Arthur's Hope, that was some performance in that allowance for Salazar.
It certainly was. A big win last time, a good figure, and it could be a good dash to the wire. But like you said, no dozing, Delacour, and everything. So I worry about that.
Mike Dinney has... been very effective placing Dynatail, and let's look at the Just a Kiss. She's 9-2. I'm a little surprised. Capla Temptress on the outside. I had not really seen this race top to bottom, but Capla Temptress, absolutely that's a Team Valor player.
Yeah, it's another wide open race, and that's my second pick in there. You know, Motz and Ortiz, the connections. But you know what? I'm a Michael Dickinson guy. I just get a kick at him, and he always has him ready to go. And he's got Lift Up, who's just throwing a clunker up at Woodbine, but certainly needed that race. And she's 2-for-2 on the Delaware turf. So I'm going to go with Lift Up as another mild upset there, the five.
All right, and I said Team Valor. It's Judmont, the Capla Temptress.
That's right.
Wears the familiar colors. And the last of the stakes action, the Dashing Beauty, longtime sprint race for the fillies and mares. And Miss Locust Point shows up in here for Cash's King and partners and John Service. But Yorkie Poo Princess, another kind of personal favorite, Eddie Barker. And she's racked up just under a half a million in earnings as well. Small field, but a good field. How about Anthony Morgata as well with Bronx Beauty?
That's who I like, Bronx Beauty. She really likes Penn National, but she's beat three of these horses, fillies, last time out, so I'm going to give her another shot with Jose Ortiz up.
Well, Rich, always a pleasure, and I so enjoy watching, and we haven't run a horse down there in a long time since our Rampillion Broker Maiden, but it's the most beautiful paddock in all of racing, and not just North America. It's for those that haven't been to the little track that could, as they say, what is it? The cute place where the big names race.
The beautiful place where the big names race.
There it is. Yeah. And Rich, how many years have you been? Have you been there?
32 years as a broadcaster, but this will be my 50th Delaware Handicap as a fan and an employee. So I've been around for a while.
And for years to come. I guess I'm waiting for Marcus Hirsch. So
okay.
I will ask you to tell the story that is just great. While you're serving in Vietnam, you managed to get a bet in on the Del Cap.
That's absolutely a true story. I was in Vietnam, and I did see action. But you could call home by way of the ham radio system. And I called my mother, and I said, bet me $5 on Politely. So the funny part of the whole story is, Steve, visualizing my old mother walking into a bookie joint and betting $5 on a horse. But the horse won, and I still have the money.
That's it. You parlayed. It's a parlay.
That's right. That's right.
Rich Glaser, always a pleasure, and enjoy tomorrow. Weather, I think, is supposed to be okay, right? There's no threats.
It never rains on Saturday at Delaware Park, Steve. It never rains on Saturday at Delaware Park. And, Steve, you do a great job for horse racing, informative and entertaining. Keep up the good work.
Too kind. Rich Glaser, everybody, and a half century of Del Caps, and if you can go tomorrow, if you can go anytime this summer, go to Delaware Park, and it's a treasure. I mean, the Mid-Atlantic tracks between Monmouth and Delaware, and you know that how much we love Maryland in general. I can't urge you enough. It's so easy too, because it's literally 2 seconds off 95 to get to Delaware Park.
6 furlongs off 95, free admission, free parking. Come on out.
I love it. Rich Glaser, everybody. Rich, enjoy. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you, Steve.
We'll stay right here because Marcus Hirsch is standing by, and Arlington Million Preview Day tomorrow. A terrific card at Arlington. And Marcus, good morning.
Hi, Steve. I'm told it's called Ride to the Million Day.
Ride to the Million? Is that the branding?
I've never called it that, but that's what I'm told it's actually called. I'm not exactly sure what it means. I think it means, like, if the first three finishers get their entry fees waived for the grade one, so maybe you get, like, a free ride, plus you can ride, like, you ride a horse in a race. The problem is, I mean, if you have to explain a tagline, then you have failed.
Well, I can say one thing, and you can shoot me down if I'm off here, but I don't know if it has anything to do with the announcements and the improved prospect for racing in Illinois in general, but it feels like there is a real improved energy, at least just looking at the cards, Marcus.
You said I could shoot you down?
Not if you want to be polite, but no, you can. Of course you can.
I'm not really seeing it. This card is really good. Day to day, it seems about status quo.
Okay.
And if you, just to briefly touch on that, I mean, the state government approved, for people who might not be aware of that, now the tracks can have slot machines in Illinois. And Fairmont and Hawthorne have already eagerly expressed their desire to create said slot machine parlors. There's also sports betting enabled, and that's going to be easier to get off the ground. Hawthorne people told me that they hope to be ready for the NFL season, at least for the, like, walk-in and make a bet or get an account thing in the brick-and-mortar facility. However, important to note that the sports betting part generates $0 for purses, so that's not a great mediator of the current situation. And then the big elephant in the room is what Arlington/CDI is going to do, because they have so far publicly expressed no plans for creating a casino or having a desire to have a casino. Everyone's still kind of waiting to see where they're going to come down. And it's important to note that CDI is the majority owner of Rivers Casino, which is the largest current existing casino in Illinois. And it sits about 13 miles the crow flies from Arlington, I believe. I think that thing is still kind of up in the air. There's definitely a lifeline to cast, but we'll see what particularly comes of that over the next couple months.
Well, for the time being and for the season, you know, certainly Million Day, we know bricks and mortar. In fact, it came up yesterday with your colleague, Dave Grenning, talking about bricks headed for the Arlington Million. And, you know, with horses bubble up to the surface really all, you know, during this portion of the calendar. And we know what a great day that'll be. But in the meantime, what you got tomorrow certainly, you know, certainly fit the bill for a big Saturday.
Yeah. On the Diana is a big Beverly D prep tomorrow, too, at Saratoga.
That's true.
And Robert Bruce, I think, comes in a million. That's going to be good. And I cannot say enough about this nine-race card. I like that it's nine races. They didn't spread it out too much. Every single race is an interesting race. I think there was 107 horses entered in the nine races. So you have a bunch of full fields, a lot of turf races. The weather's supposed to be good. I think that anyone who dives into this card is going to find a lot to think about and a lot to consider playing.
Well, let's. We should mention, actually, in addition to the sequence of the four stakes, there's also a couple of very good two-year-old maiden races, and there's a three-year-old mile turf event that ends the card and is going to end the pick five and the pick four. That's very bettable, and you've got a lot of horses that have got established form. You got a couple of firsters, but the ninth is a maiden special weight that you're going to have to figure out if you're going to play the multis, which includes the stakes. Let's start with the Hatouf, which seems certainly bettable.
Yeah, this would be prep for the tucker up. I believe they're going to be employing two, I think they're going to put the rail up on the turf and use two lanes. The Hatouf seems to be, I think that's in lane one, unless it's also, I know the greatest stakes should be on the outer court. But the one that I liked in the Hatouf was the German filly Dalika for trainer Al Stahl, who, made a lot of progress from her U.S. debut to her second start to beat older horses last time. I think that she's going to at least run back to that race and be very competitive. I do not believe she will be nearly as high as her 6-1 morning line. On the rail, there's a kind of interesting horse named Winning Envelope, who was sold privately in her two-year-old season after a sparkling debut. She's had... She has three excuses. All of her races this year are probably not fully representative of what she can do, although I doubt she would want to run much farther than a mile and a 16th. And I thought that Spectralite was worthy of at least a little note, number eight, who should beat her 10-1 odds. Those connections, trainer Brian House and jockey Eddie Martin won the Iowa Derby last weekend before being disqualified with winning number, shipping a horse from Canterbury like this filly, who had a troubled trip running against the Colts and Geldings in the $200,000 Mystic Lake Derby, her first start in the U.S. She might be okay, too, at least as far as this race goes.
You know, by the way, you mentioned that, and I think it was on Thursday, or must have been on Wednesday, was the first chance I really had to talk about. I thought that DQ was frivolous as can be.
I don't know if I would go quite that far. I've seen worse, but I couldn't really get behind it, just because it was a question of, do you have the right to a spot that maybe you shouldn't be in?
Exactly.
I mean, the horse that was fouled maybe shouldn't, like, yeah, the horse that crossed the wire first came off its path just slightly, enabling, you know, you to get up in there, but is that really where you want to put your mount? And I don't think that Eddie did, I mean, I don't think he did anything egregious. It's just, and it's another case where, and anyone who's been following stuff on social media and with the Derby and everything, the horse that was interfered with, who probably was in a spot he shouldn't have been in, and no doubt had his path taken away and had run, of course you can't say, no idea what would have happened had the horse gotten through, but he didn't even finish second. So, like in the Kentucky Derby, all due respect to Country House, you had a horse that was placed first who was never going to win, and so it's just another one of those situations where the rule needs to be rewritten so that you're not in a position to have to do that. You know, penalize the jockey in a way that makes it hurt enough. Make sure they understand that you have to be, you know, exercising a degree of caution. But doing two wrongs to fix one only theoretical right, and the two wrongs are taking down a worthy winner and elevating an unworthy winner, while maybe getting a horse, you know, put up to a place that it could have achieved. That's always, to me, the wrong way to go. But anyway, Spectralite might be okay.
Let's talk about the Modesty, the first of the three graded stakes, mile and 3/16. Certainly Juliet Foxtrot, the Judmont, Brad Cox is the filly to beat in her graded stake debut. Well, I got a price in here that I absolutely adore.
She might be the filly to beat. I mean, I guess Simply Breathless has achieved a little bit more, having won the Wilshire last time as compared to a second-level allowance for Juliet Foxtrot. Although, Foxtrot was undoubtedly impressive in that allowance race win for Brad Cox, but I thought Simply Breathless ran well, too, and had a... has a chance to keep getting better. She's my 4-year-old as well. I'm trying to guess who your long shot is. Casca Noises?
No.
Okay. Do tell.
I'm going to go with my man Gary Shearer and the Old Wellings. Remember, Daisy is a really good fit in here at 8-1.
Okay. I have to say I was a little disappointed with her Lady Canterbury last time, but this will be her third start off a layoff. You think she can stay?
I don't see why not. And she absolutely runs for Mitch Merrill as well, who gets reunited with her. Not to say that there's anything wrong with Eddie Martin. He won with her at Canterbury to start the season. However, third off the layoff, it feels like this is what Shearer was pointing toward the whole time. And at 8-1, I'm in.
She could be even higher than that. I mean, I can't fault you for taking a shot because I do not think that the short prices here are unassailable by any stretch of the imagination. And the third choice would be Vexatious, I believe, for Jack Sisterson, who comes out of it. Out of the New York. So she and the other two we already mentioned, those are the shorter prices. But while, you know, especially the top two, I think are decent. I mean, I would agree that if you wanted to, if you had some sort of angle, I wouldn't fear trying to beat them.
Exactly. Let's push on to the Arlington Handicap. And this, of course, the boys, mile and 3/16, the grade three. And another eclectic field. I don't really have something firm in here to talk about. Yeah,
it's an interesting race. I actually think it's okay. I've seen, you know, the both that this race has gotten in the past, and this is one of the better ones recently. A couple of housekeeping notes here. My Barilli, who is cross center in the Warrior Veterans at Indiana Grand, will run in this race. And Captivating Moon was cross-centered in the first race of the day at Arlington, the second level allowance. And as of yesterday afternoon, decision had not been made which race he would run in. I will update that when I have a chance. The horse I like in here, I'm going to go back to El Picaro, who I also tried to get home in the Wise Dan last out. I don't think that's a representative effort for him at all. If you go back and watch his races from Chile, where he's a multiple grade one winner and was impressive in winning many of those races, his style is to be forward. He's a very free-running, strong, galloping horse who can just keep on going. He broke a little bit flat-footed and then was held off the pace in the wide stand. He resented that. He fought the rider almost the entire trip. And then when it came time to try to finish, he understandably, not only making his North American debut and first start back from the long layoff, but he had already aggravated himself, you know, battling with his jockey. This is a perfect spot for him in the sense that it's good distance for him, I believe, and there's not a ton of speed, so he can either be on the lead or sit right off the pace, provided he breaks and gets a good early position. And I think we're going to see a performance like I saw on the video from Chile, which is, I think, plenty good enough to win this race.
I like it. And El Picaro, you're looking at 9-2 to start the bid.
I don't think so. I wish I was looking at 9-2. I'm guessing it with Valdivia and looking at the composition of the rest of the field, I don't think it'll be that high. But maybe Bandula, it's a nice horse too, really.
Sure.
On the rail. I don't think you can really fault, I mean, his form with regard to this level race right now. I mean, he ran okay in the New Orleans handicap. I thought it was a worthwhile dirt experiment, then didn't run at all in the slop at Belmont in another dirt race. But his turf form this year, yeah, contested pace in the Manhattan, beaten four lengths by Bricks and Mortar. That's a pretty good race. And then made the lead in mid-stretch before getting maybe a little tired for straight back from a long layoff in the Fairgrounds handicap. And think what he did at Woodbine last time was, I thought, really impressive. That's an excellent horse. So those two races make him a solid fit in the Arlington handicap, in my opinion.
Well, and I'll also note that I'll give you one horse that just sort of caught my eye because of a running line, Marcus, and that's the Great Day, the second North America starter, right, for Arnaud Delacour and Leal.
Yeah.
This one debuted in North America in the Prince George's County and had traffic issues, and there's not one but two horses that will have run out of that race before this race goes off. Dr. Mounty runs today in our stake in the quick call, and Just Howard runs in the Glasgow tomorrow at Delaware.
Mm-hmm. To me, the key for the Great Day is getting stretched out. I didn't like him last time, and granted, he's in trouble, but I thought tomorrow 16th was going to end up being short. My question about this horse is whether he prefers turf or dirt. If you look at his from South America, you might wonder. He does have pretty good form. I'm running through Village King, who has done well in North America. But, I think he's going to run a better race. But I don't – I think I picked him third.
Fair enough. Let's get to maybe the day's best race, and that is the three-year-olds that will make their way toward the Secretariat, the American Derby, a longstanding standard in the game.
Yeah.
Field of 13.
The once called the Mid-America. Wait, what was it called? It's been so long. Mid-America Turf Triple or something?
Right. Mid-America Triple. Yeah.
They are Arlington Classic, the American Derby, and the Secretariat. The Secretariat, if anyone has forgotten, was cut back from a quarter to a mile this year to avoid the big turf race at Saratoga, I guess the Saratoga Derby, which was cannibalized it. So they went shorter. So this race is shorter, mile 16th, the Secretariat's mile. Very interesting field. I think that the distance decision is paying dividends with the field that was settled here, although I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple of scratches. Despite the long layoff, hasn't run since November 25th, I'm pretty sure that Flying Scotsman is going to be the favorite. This is his three-year-old making his first start of the year, and he was very impressive in his turf route. He beat Omaha Beach in a maiden race. They tried to get him into the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. He didn't have enough credentials to make that oversubscribed field. But as a consolation prize, he was a very sharp winner of Cecil B. DeMille in his last start. The break is what it is. The trainer, Jack Sisterson, has had him for about a month. He worked twice for him at Keeneland. what he said was they let him gallop out after those easy half miles just to get them air, and as long as he didn't seem to get tired at all. He does not think that fitness is going to be an issue. And he's, I think he's the most talented horse in the race that I've seen. However, with an outside draw, layoff, and he might be even shorter than his morning line, pretty sure he will be. I ended up picking Bundy Bunan, another Ignacio Correa's horse. You have to watch this horse's races, I think, to appreciate his current form line. At Cayman, over a good course, he ran in a very good allowance races. He went to Marshall, an award winner. I don't think he loved the going there, and then he had relatively undocumented trouble. So look at the short comment from me. My teacher wouldn't see he had a terrible trip in that race. And he only lost last time because a horse came out and got in his way before the eighth pole, between the 3/16ths of the eighth pole, and lost a little momentum. Caused him the victory. I do feel like he's coming into this race in excellent form. There's no doubt that this is not an issue for him with all the racing he's done. And, I don't know that he'll be 6-1. I think he'll be a fair price for flying Scotsman in the race.
Well, my my price idea in here, Marcus, is War Film, who gets to save all the ground. And I am a mammoth sucker for the Dam. I loved her as a racehorse filmmaker. Absolutely. And I also, not that there's anything wrong with Ricardo Santana or Florent Giroux, who, have both ridden her to victories. But one of my favorite people takes the reins, Miguel Mena. And you want somebody that'll rouse a horse and finish. Miguel Mena is going to fit this this 3-year-old colt. And
yeah.
12-1
for me. I think he made the Miguel was mainly here to ride Al for Delica and Hatouf, who he's been on, but I'm sure that War Film connections casting about for jockey up here were perfectly happy to land on him. I don't know what happened in the Murphy. He just didn't pick up there, but if he can get back to his American turf, he's a perfectly viable contender. I believe you will get a price in this horse. I think, depending on scratches, there's almost certainly going to be a strong pace in this race. So even though it's a bulky field, hopefully they'll be spread out enough that you'll get a truly run race here, and the horse coming off the pace will have a chance to get through.
Well, I do need your opinion in the nightcap as well, that maiden special weight, Marcus, because people are going to want to play the pick 4 and pick 5, and they need a little Marcus to help them.
Well, my top pick is number 7. Capernaum, whose sister, what is her name? She runs in the Modesty and she's not quite that caliber, but she's run some good races in the past. And Capernaum, the trainer Bradley Ross doesn't have many horses, but he has done some good work with that other filly, and this horse has been working forever, is working 3/4 in good, solid fashion back in May. I feel like she's ready to show whatever she has, and Candy Ride up here. The leading jockey takes the mount. I do think that people tend to shy away from first-timers in route races, especially from barns they don't know about. So even with Valdivia up, I'm guessing the price is going to be fair. I think that horse is probably live in this race. Louis Roussel had a couple horses. The next best thing ran 2 decent turf sprints in New Orleans and probably can get this longer trip. But his first-time starter as well was out of a mare that was talented, Vacation Lover, number 6. I wasn't ruling her out either. And let me see if there's anyone else that we need to cover. I mean, Ignacio's horse, Chavez, I suppose that horse could end up being favored. And she ran all right. She's fine. She could win. Not to play amateur jockeyologist here, but, Valdivia does ride the horses for Ignacio in the States and rides for him regularly here. And it ends up on this other horse who you might be a little surprised to see him on with Mix Merle on Chavez. So that may or may not mean something. I think it means that the other horses worked impressively enough that the Valdivia team thinks that she could run well first time out.
Well, Marcus, I appreciate that, and I appreciate the look and the summer well underway. Anything else that you've been following that we need to report on?
Not too much. I mean, Indiana card is pretty good on Saturday night. DRF team, Byron team, ended up handling the advance to that, but I did the picks and took a really good long look at that. I got a couple plays coming out off that card, actually, on DRF game plan later today. And Hong Kong season's winding down, but Europe's in full swing, and I'm also covering Canterbury Parade, those as usual, and can find my work everywhere on DRF.
Outstanding, and I will watch for those opinions. For those that don't know about game plan, DRF game plan gives you looks at a lot of the big stakes action on weekends, obviously, but also kind of combs all the racing for ideas. There's a clipboard of races and featured, you know, throughout a day, and multi-race plays from Mike Beer and Kenny Peck and, you know, whoever has got something good. And game plan doesn't get enough attention, actually. It's one of those little hidden nuggets on at DRF.com.
Yeah, you can find it in the handicapping PEP section. There's a link to it there. It's pretty worthwhile, I think.
Always worthwhile when we get a chance to talk to Marcus Hirsch about whatever it is, Louisiana, International, Chicagoland, and more. Marcus, enjoy. Good luck tomorrow. Thanks for the visit.
Thanks for having me.
Always great. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. DRF Hirsch on your Twitter. Let's take a break. A little past the top of the hour, 10 minutes past the top of the hour. And Mike Beer, the aforementioned Mike Beer, standing by. He'll join us. We'll do some Saratoga work with Beer. Then James Scully, Ed DeRosa, Jay Privman, Nick Tamaro. Lots to do. A little less than 2 hours. Weekend preview at the races, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9888. 938-4643.
Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, 15 into hour two, day two of Saratoga. Mike Beer, lead analyst for the Daily Racing Form, following Marcus Hirsch and ahead of Jay Pribman. So it's the trifecta. If you bet Hirsch, Beer, Pribman in the At the Races DRF pundit pool, you're a winner. Mike Beer, good morning.
I boxed it, Steve.
Well, you know, Marcus, well, Jay is typically, you know, 8-5. You know, you actually have been moving up the roster. We're getting into that threatened rotation with Beer on a regular basis.
I wasn't a precocious 2-year-old, Steve. But I'm starting to come around. It took me a while, but I'm starting to come around.
I love it. How'd you do yesterday?
Nothing great. I actually, could have done well. I liked Linda's horse and the quick call. I needed Electronic to get there. If Electronic gets there, I have a good day. He didn't get there, so I did not have a good day.
Well, and you know, that's one of the things about this venue, and a lot of, you know, Caneland and Del Mar to an extent, and Gulfstream in the winter, at least the way it used to be when there was good racing. The opportunities, you need one or two a week, or, you know, three or four, maybe four figure pops, depending on, you know, your style of play. If you're a multi-race player, you absolutely need a few four figure hits. You know, the horse yesterday for me wasn't a top pick, you know, going into the day, but the Charlie Baker, Light the Posse, who, if he took to the grass, was absolutely competitive and needed a brilliant ride by Alvarado, but a $30 horse, it'll do wonders for you.
The trip made a lot of difference in there, but, you know, you're right in that all he had to do was transfer his form to turf, and he had at least some pedigree to do it. Whether, you know, the Posses maybe aren't great on turf, but that horse had a lot of turf on the bottom, and you know, the horses that were the known quantities on grass just hadn't, you know, quite been that good. I mean, the horse that he ran down, who at one point seemed like he was going to be okay, his race prior to this one yesterday was not good, and you know, he had no real excuse yesterday either.
No, and that mutual, it's funny because Tina, we were at a table, and our friends Steve Carlin and Dr. Alan Miller, and they bet him different ways. I bet a pick three with him, and the pick three that then from there followed up with, you know, horses. We got the monies, who, you know, was a universal good thing, and comical, but $400. For a buck.
Oh, wow, yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. You only need one of those, right? You need that one price in there, and, you know, you're going to do all right in those multi-race sequences, that's for sure.
What's your approach, and do you wade into your action? What do you find yourself typically at Saratoga, you know, betting? What's your bankroll application?
Yeah, I like to play, you know, it's interesting because I find that, especially over maybe the last year or so, I'm trying to change things a little bit, just because, you know, whether it's just, you know, me, you know, not having a good year or whatever it is, I've struggled a little bit, because I'm mostly a multi-race player. I do like to make win bets. I've always, you know, sort of tried to stand by that as much as I can. I mean, that's because, you know, mostly I'm not, you know, sticking with favorites. I'm always trying to beat favorites if at all possible. So I will make win bets on horses at prices. But, you know, I feel like, I don't know, for whatever reason, I've struggled over the last year after a couple of, you know, really good years before that. So
I'm starting to maybe try and change things up a little bit. I still love the pick four. And, you know, obviously the pick five is, I think, a tremendous wager with the lower denomination. So I'm always focusing on those if I can. But now I'm starting to maybe try and wade into some other wagers. I've gone back to playing a lot of doubles, which I love. And for some reason, I just haven't been doing that the last couple of years. But I'm starting to look at that wager a little bit more, some exactas as well. I've never been a trier super guy. I don't know why that is, but I just never have been. And it just isn't something that I feel like I'm ever going to get around to. So, but I used to like to play. I'm starting to play more exactas now. I'm just trying to mix things up a little bit, Steve, and see what happens. But as far as, you know, wading into meets go, I don't necessarily do that. I understand the idea behind it. You know, you want to get to a new track like Saratoga and just see how things start developing and how the races lay out. But, you know, I'm pretty much at the point now where, you know, if it's opening day and there are horses that I like, you know, I'm betting them. I'm not trying to, you know, take it slow in the beginning and then build up momentum. If there's horses I like, I want to be involved.
No, you got to fire. And is there a certain format that you either gravitate toward or that you have a tendency to avoid, whether it's the maidens? The steam scenarios around here are, when it comes to the two-year-old maiden specials, yeah, it's ridiculous. And, you know, then all you need to do is see, you know, a horse like Gullo. And Gullo can win, you know, with a young horse. But a horse like that yesterday, a big Q. And speaking of which, I didn't get a chance to mention this earlier when Rich Migliori was on. How about the way the money came in on the Bruce Levine, on Impassable Donna, who was 12-1 morning line, and then gets bet down to favoritism?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's the real danger with playing those races, right? It feels like there are always people just way more in the know than you are. I think you want to be conscious of that, and you want to be on the lookout for it. But, you know, it's interesting to bring that up because I had this conversation with somebody over at the track yesterday. I love betting two-year-old races. So, and I understand that, you know, there are people who are going to have an edge over me in certain situations. They're going to know things that I don't know. And so, like, you want to be on the lookout for it. But, you know, I still love betting those races. I particularly love to bet them after a race, you know, when it's all first-time starters. You know, maybe I'll get involved, maybe I won't. But after they've had a race, you know, the two-year-old maiden races are some of my favorite races to wager on because it doesn't take a lot, especially if you're paying attention and watching replays. It doesn't take a lot to get latched onto a horse that may not look that great on paper. I mean, there are plenty of two-year-old, you know, second-time starters who may not look like they did much first time out, but if you were paying attention and watching, you know, you can just catch a little something that is there that a lot of people may miss. And that's how you can make money because, you know, it's horses like that will slip through the cracks when people are concentrating on trainers and pedigrees and workouts and all that stuff, and maybe not paying as much attention to how horses ran. And you can just, you know, catch one of those horses at a price that will, you know, those horses will just get sort of ignored for whatever reason if people don't catch on to it.
And you do bring up, you know, certainly the clocking report and Don Harris and Dave Grenig and Mike Welsh, you know, right away yesterday, a couple of, you know, very good insights that helped with either exotic horses underneath that, you know, got elevated and so forth, or, you know, horses that actually you might have even ended up fading a little bit because they weren't necessarily, you know, coming in with a work tab that you know gave you much confidence. So there's any number of ways to hit. You know, the area that I love are the state bred allowances, and particularly on the turf. It's unbelievable how competitive they are, and you know there's a couple of things that go on with them too that's very unique. You've got horses that might come in from parts unknown, New York breds that have been competing elsewhere, and they'll come in and they've been facing, you know, starter allowance company or various conditional claiming, and they look a little muddied up. Plus, they're coming from, you know, places where their figures may be a little murky, and maybe they come in looking a little slower than the ones that have been, you know, spending the winter and spring at Aqueduct and Belmont, and all of a sudden, you know, you got some horse with slightly oddball, you know, connections from Maryland or from Pennsylvania, and they're competitive when they come back to face their friends.
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's another good point you bring up too, is that I always I love finding horses like that who maybe they will ship in for, you know, not for one of the big name trainers, but just for, you know, some person who, you know, can win races, but maybe isn't, you know, a horse that, or a trainer that gets a lot of attention and people, you know, because there is that segment of the population still, and I don't think it's as prevalent as it used to be, but that will just, you know, they gravitate towards the names that they know, trainers and riders. And those horses, you know, oftentimes take way too much money just because if it's a confusing race, you know, people will just sort of gravitate to what they know and say, well, I guess I'll just go with the, you know, Chad Brown. I guess I'll just go with the, you know, the best trainer will win this race perhaps. But I don't know. I love finding those guys. Formulator's great for that too. You can just go in to look up their, you know, 5-year record and you'll find a lot of trainers who, you know, you may not know much about them, but when you start going through their overall record, especially over the last 5 years, you can find some very interesting stuff.
Mike Beer with us, everybody. And what is, I think we're going to see you a little occasionally on the prattles or talking horses, yes?
I don't know about that. I haven't heard anything at this point.
Okay.
So we'll see. Every once in a while I'll get a call to fill in, but as of now I don't have any plans to be doing any of that up here.
Oh, so you're kind of just out there. You're just kind of out there grifting, going from picnic table to picnic table, introducing yourself to people. And...
Yeah. Glad handing in the back. I'd like to hang out in the backyard. I go to the clubhouse a lot. I'm everywhere. I just walk around the track.
I love it. And you'll be on this show, obviously. And sure. We're going to get you. And you know what? We're also going to showcase you. Seth and I will showcase you on Loose on the Lead. You could be the house DRF handicapper on Loose on the Lead.
I'm down for that. Keep me in mind if you need me. I'll be here all meet.
Outstanding. Tip your waitresses. try the veal. Mike, before we look at Saturday, are your picks in for Sunday yet?
I'm finishing them right now. As soon as I get off with you, I got to send them. So.
All right. Well, then let's talk about Saturday. But anything for today? You got one or two that maybe even, of course, we've got four races off the turf that involve. What are you doing in the feature, actually? Because I thought it was very competitive.
Yeah, I did too. I thought that race was very tough. You know, I actually feel like, you know, a lot of different horses can win there, Steve. You know, I don't really want to get too much into it just because I feel like maybe I wound up taking the easy way out and, you know, I picked Curbon on top. I don't know. Obviously, he can win, and in many ways, he might just be the horse to beat. I just, you know, I struggled with the race a little bit. I felt like he could probably land in the right trip here if Gidu and Voodoo Strong sort of go out there and use their speed. You know, he doesn't have a great post, but he's supposed to be able to get forward and maybe over to save some ground. And I just felt like his best race would do it. You know, I guess more than anything else, I might have put him on top because the other horse that I like in the race has Made You Look for Chad, and he's off a layoff here. You know, not that he can't run well off the layoff, but it's a pretty long one. And I just, you know, it's not like being for Chad Brown and Irad that he can be a great price, and I didn't want to put him on top at, you know, sort of a relatively short price off that layoff. So I took Curbon on top, and, you know, but as you said, a lot of different horses can win here.
I am going to take a swing with Shuggy Bear and Dr. Mounty. When I brought this race up to Shug on Tuesday, he you could hear in his voice. I mean, he immediately sounded excited, and he to the point where I believe he said, "We should go get the sound bite." I believe he said, "I'll be real disappointed."
Wow.
If he doesn't run well. Yeah.
Listen, he's an underrated horse, so.
At 15-1, and because of the presence of, you know, Offering Plan and Made You Look, I think you're going to get at least 10, 12-1 at the very least.
Gotta be.
Right?
Gotta be. Yeah. Yeah, he's got to be. There are way too many options in here for him not to be a very fair price in this race. And like I said, I think he's a very underrated horse. And again, if, you know, you get the Gidu Voodoo Song, you know, if they're using their speed in this race is going to set up great for this horse.
There 10 horses in here, and I'm assuming that everybody's running. Right now the turf is yielding, but Glenn Kozak told me he had an inkling that with some breeze and some sun that we could be at least good by post time, which is 5:51 today. I could not bring myself to I'll only use Voodoo Song as a B. I know you're a sucker for Kurban, and there's horses that haven't even been brought up here, like Hembry and Mr. Haverkamp, and how about even what about March to the Arch coming off of a win? And I used for Mrs. Weber, and I used the other Cassie. I used First Premio, who's going to get a ground saving trip inside.
Yeah. I mean, he's supposed to get a great trip in this race. I took a long look at him and wondered if I really thought he was good enough to win this race, because I do think this is a very strong race. But listen, obviously his best race is going to put him there, and trips can go a long way in a race like this. First Premio is supposed to get a good one. You know, part of what also went into my thinking of this race, and, you know, sometimes this matters and sometimes it doesn't, but, you know, I bet Hembry last time, and I thought he ran fine, and he's in very, very good form for Maker right now, but I bet him last time, and so, you know, I didn't really want to go back to him again, and I have the same, you know, sort of problem with March to the Arch. I bet him last time, and I just thought he got a great trip in that race and won, and so I just didn't really want to go back to him in this race. I actually think he won a grade two last time. I think he's in a tougher race today in a grade three than he was last time, but that doesn't mean he can't win. He's an improving four-year-old. You know, he takes another step forward, he's going to be right there.
That's the Forbidden Apple, the grade three today, and a mile on the inner. It's a good one. Let's turn our attention to Saturday. Mike Beard with us. And Mike, you're going to be ahead of me because, as usual, when this meet, especially this year, because the meet kind of caught up on us, and I was on vacation last week. So I will have to handicap the Saturday card myself tomorrow. And give us a couple of highlights of tomorrow and what who you know you're betting.
Who I know I'm betting. I'm going to put, let's see. The horse, I'll start with the horse that I made my best bet in the form, if I can find the race. I've looked at so many races in the last 4 days that I can't remember who's running on which day. I like in the fifth race, speaking of Mark Cassie, I like his horse in the fifth. It's a 1X allowance turf sprint for fillies and mares. And it's one of those races that's, you know, that you love at Saratoga because it brings a lot of different horses together from all over the place. And Wesley Ward has a horse who just won very easily at Churchill at 5 furlongs with an 84. And, you know, you expect expect speed out of that horse. But I feel like this is a pretty tough race. What I liked about this race more than anything else is that Chad has the import turf war coming in from France, a horse who burned a ton of cash over there. And we'll probably get bet again in this race. And, yeah, I just don't know that this horse has actually landed in the easiest 1X allowance race. So I just sort of wanted to be against that horse. I thought I'll Handle the Cash is interesting, but he's entered in the she's entered in the Coronation Cup on Sunday. So I think she's probably going to run there. And Catch a Thrill for Cassie, to me, just makes a lot of sense. This horse ran really, really well breaking her maiden first time out. You know, just you don't often see the kind of ride she got in a 5 furlong turf sprint first time out. But Julian Leperoux rode her very confidently in that race. He just took her back off the pace. He stayed on the outside the entire way, and she really ran through the stretch to close that race down. And I thought she ran just as well in her second start. They ran her in a stakes race, and she got wired that day, but she was running at the end. I really liked her first two starts, Steve. And they stretched her out. I get it. They stretched her out in the Appalachian, soft turf. And they put her on the lead that day. It didn't work out. I don't care about that race. She's off a little layoff here, sprinting again on turf that should be closer to firm by tomorrow, you would hope. And I just think she's in a really good spot in this race. I liked her and Originator were the two horses I liked best in that race. I was a fan of Originator last year, and I feel like she's better than, you know, she may look on paper. You see a bunch of second place finishes, but she's had excuses for some of those races. I think she's going to run better off the layoff.
Well, and I also imagine that, considering that Jose Ortiz rode her last year, Chris Landeros did ride her at the beginning of her career, her first four starts, including the maiden win and, you know, in the Sanibel Island and et cetera over the course of the late winter and spring. But got to feel like Ian Wilkes doing what he can to help his son-in-law, you know, hit the ground running.
He's an excellent rider, by the way. He's an excellent rider, Chris Landeros. I'm glad he's here for the meet. He's a guy that I don't get to see that much, but if I'm telling you, if I saw, you know, 10 races at Gulfstream over the winter where I was like, wow, who rode that horse? That was a great ride. It was always him. I don't know. He, to me, he's a really good rider, that kid.
Well, we're riding him in the second with Minute Mouse. So I'm certainly, and we had Mig on earlier to talk about how it all came about with Rich handling his book. So
right,
you may have to slap Andy around a little bit about Chris. Yeah. So when you get a chance, all right.
Oh yeah, okay. All right.
What are you going to do in the Diana? We've been taking every occasion to remind people that stake races that are valued at $50,000 or more, where people pay entry fees, they're all individual entries, and that's a rule that's been on the books a long time. There weren't some special accommodation made for right. Chad Brown. The right. stupidest comments on the internet I've ever seen something was done to accommodate Peter Brandt right. and Chad Brown. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, they need a lot of help, those guys. So I'm sure they're pulling out all the stops for these guys. I don't know. You know, listen, I mean, what can you say about this race? I can understand, you know, perhaps, you know, some of the frustration to pull up every graded stakes race on turf that we run around here and to see, you know, Chad with the four favorites in every race. It can be frustrating. I think at least in the case of the Diana, if you're looking for the silver lining, this is an unbelievable matchup between perhaps, you know, Chad is, you know, has no shortage of top filly and mare turf horses, especially. These might be the three best turf horses in his barn, and they're all in the same race. And, you know, you get to decide between the three of them. I didn't think it was that easy. I ultimately decided that I will try to beat Sister Charlie. I know that she can win off the layoff. Against two really sharp horses, I will try to beat her, and just, you know, see what she does in here. And so I, you know, sort of narrowed it down to between Rushing Fall, who I will admit that, you know, I've been wrong about her. Not that I didn't like her, but I always felt like maybe she was vulnerable in some of her races. And the more I watch her run, Steve, I mean, how good is she? She should be undefeated right now. The only loss, that Edgewood last year, was a brutal beat for her with the trip. I can't believe that she almost won that race, considering how she ran. I mean, considering the trip she got. I mean, and she just, you know, you look at her last three races, yeah, she's loose on the lead, you know, these really soft trips and winning, but she doesn't need that trip to win. She wins from off the pace. She'll win from stalking the pace. She went from on the lead. She'll go any distance. She's just a really good horse. I'm not way against her, but I will say, I picked Homerique on top. I have been really impressed with her, too. Win since she got here. You know, I don't know if she can beat Rushing Fall. I don't know if she can beat Sister Charlie for that matter, but she was a good horse in France last year. And I really, really liked her two races since she got here. And I just thought maybe she'll be the third choice of the three Chads. And that's why I put her on top. And I'm very interested to see how she runs, because these are two good horses she's running against, but I really like her races.
Well, two things. For starters, as you gave that dissertation, A Rushing Fall, I absolutely got the deja vu if we go into our archive from last summer, and I think ahead of the Lake Placid, we had the identical conversation. And I'm almost positive, right?
I remember betting Catholic Temptress in that race, thinking Rushing Fall doesn't have to win. You know, why is she so good? And I remember betting Capital Tempters in that race and going, she's never going to be able to beat this horse. This is crazy. What was I thinking?
It was pretty funny. Well, yeah. I will say one thing. I saw that there was a tweet. Somebody did a poll head to head. Mitchell Road, the Mott Jerry Shields runner, and Secret yeah. Message. Who of the non Chads finishes ahead of each other? There's a chance that Secret mm-hmm. Message finishes ahead of everybody. That performance in the Nassau. Was excellent, and do not be shy. If you are handicapping, you say, why can't Secret Message win this race? She can. So, I mean, I'm going to use her in amongst, you know, the obvious players. You know, for those that yeah. were complaining, if you took the trainers' names off of this race, you basically have six horses that are within two lengths of each other on their existing recent form. So if that,
yeah,
it's on the turf.
That's true. That's very true. It's a great race. I have no argument with that whatsoever.
Good.
I just retweeted Andy. Andy gets the scratches out ahead of everybody. He goes to the mutual department and gets them and sends them out for everybody. So if you are looking for the scratches before they go up on ADWs and on Equibase, it's on Twitter, Andy Serling. And you should be following Andy anyway. And you should be following Mike Beer and, you know, stop him, buy him a drink you know, during. He'll be here all Saratoga.
Mm-hmm. I will be. You don't have to follow me. You can if you want to, but you don't have to.
Well, you're not exactly prolific on the Twitter machine.
Not really my thing.
It's DRF underscore beer. How about videos? Are you going to be doing videos?
Tons of videos, man. I already did. We did, you know, obviously all the Saratoga ones already. We did I actually yesterday did a bunch with Illman about the couple of Arlington races that looked very good on Saturday. A late run on Saturday. So I did a couple extra videos outside of Saratoga. But yeah, doing videos every day. Probably all the stakes races for sure. That's, you know, at Saratoga.
Well, there you go. There's your access to Mike Beer when we don't provide him here for you. Mike, I appreciate it. I will see you later and over the weekend.
Anytime, Steve. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Mike Beer, everybody. Let's take a break. We'll come back. James Scully is going to join us. We got Scully. We got Jay Pribman, top of the hour. We've got some Nick Tamaro. And got to get Ed feathered in here, too, I imagine, before we break camp at the races back after this. And I do want to add a birthday greeting. I saw through the magic of the Internet. It's the great Billy Reed's birthday, the long time. Not just turf writer, but scribe of renown. Wish Billy Reed a happy birthday. And those that are wondering about the cross-country pick five tomorrow, the races at Delaware started off. The seventh, I think it's the seventh and the eighth. Let me make one check before I misspeak. The seventh is the Glasgow, and the eighth. So the seventh and eighth at Delaware, and then the ninth, 10th, 11th at Saratoga is your cross-country pick five tomorrow. Back after this, James Scully.